Marcy found it invigorating to work by candlelight. Perhaps it was the primordial danger of it. Electric lights felt safe, contained, harnessed. But an open flame, well, that was something raw, alive, a little spark of fury which, if released, could destroy her and everything she worked on. She worked with a lot of such sparks these days. Spread on her desk in the Octant Constabulary headquarters were notes, files, interviews. She'd been present for most of them over the last 2 weeks, advising Constable General Reddy. The two of them worked so closely these days, it was sometimes hard to remember how difficult he'd been to her during her early days in the constabulary. Though Suit himself hadn't broken, many of his men had talked. They knew just enough to be infuriating. They'd been recruited from among the dissident young men of the outer cities, their ears stuffed with stories of the survivor and his fight against Imperial rule. They'd been trained in cities like Rashikin and Bilming, far from central rule, in closed compounds that were much more extensive than anyone had known. Aradel and the others had focused on these details. Troops, timetables, technology, like the long-distance speaking device Waxillium had stolen from Lady Kelesina's mansion. They geared up for war, all the while talking peace. They were scared, and legitimately so. Decades of not-so-benign neglect had created this snarl. Hopefully, it could still be peacefully untangled. Marcy left that to politicians. She cut through the jingoism, the rhetoric, and turned her attention to something else. Stories among the men of something unusual, beyond the rumors of airships and new alimentic metals. She held up one sheet covered in notes, half-mentions, admissions made with sideways glances, always spoken of in whispers. Tales of men with red eyes who visited in the night. She added the stories to her files of research about Trell, the ancient god that people were somehow worshipping again. A god that had crafted spikes to corrupt the Chandra Pa'alm, and whose name was on the lips of many of the prisoners. She'd spent months researching, and so far felt like she knew nothing. But she would find answers, one way or another. Suit's captors thought to shock him with the austerity of his quarters. A common cell in the prison's nethers, with a bucket for facilities and one blanket on the bed. A tired, pointless tactic. As if he'd known only rose petals and feather beds in his life. As if he'd never slept on a stone slab. Well, they would see. Anything could be an advantage. In this case, it was a chance to prove himself. He would not break, and they would see. So it was that he wasn't at all surprised when, after 2 weeks of captivity, the door to the corridor outside his cell opened one night and a stranger stalked in. Male, this time, with a ragged beard and wild hair. A beggar stolen off the street, Suit guessed. You could tell them by the way they walked. Never a stroll, never leisurely. Always fast, determined, purposeful. Of course, the softly glowing red eyes were another sign. So far as Suit had been able to determine, Waxillium and his fools had no knowledge of these creatures. They didn't understand, couldn't understand. The set had faceless immortals of its own. Suit stood, pulling down the sleeves of his prisoner's jumpsuit and swiping the wrinkles from his shoulders.
2 weeks is longer than I expected.
Our timeline is not yours.
I was not complaining, merely observing. I am perfectly willing to wait upon Trell's pleasure.
Are you? It is our understanding that you push for an acceleration.
I was merely stating my perspective so that a proper discourse can be engaged.
The creature studied him through the bars.
You didn't break or spill secrets.
I did not.
We are impressed.
Thank you.
Advantage. Even 2 weeks in prison can be used to prove a point.
The timeline will be accelerated. As you have requested.
Excellent.
The creature reached into its pocket and removed a device like a small package wrapped in wires. One of Irich's early attempts at creating an explosive device from the metal that powered the airships. It had proven ineffective, barely more explosive than dynamite when they needed something that could end cities.
What is that?
Our accelerated pace will no longer require the set to have its full hierarchy.
But you need us. To rule, to manage civilization.
No longer. Recent advances have made civilization here too dangerous. Allowing it to continue risks further advances we cannot control, and so we have decided to remove life on this sphere instead. Thank you for your service. It has been accepted. You will be allowed to serve in another realm.
But...
Wax started awake. Had that been an explosion? He looked around the quiet bedroom suite of the tower penthouse. Steris curled up on the bed next to him, perfectly still in her sleep, though she held lightly to his arm. She often did that, as if afraid to let go and risk all this ending. Looking at her there in the starlight, he was shocked by the deep affection he felt for her. His surprise didn't concern him. He could remember many a morning waking next to Lessie, feeling that same surprise. Amazement at his good fortune, astonishment at the depth of his own emotion. He gently lifted her hand away, then pulled the sheet up around her before slipping from the bed and strolling bare-chested across the room toward the balcony. They'd stayed here in the penthouse through the honeymoon rather than returning to the mansion. It felt like a good way to have a new beginning, and Wax was starting to think he might like to relocate here more permanently. He was a new person for what seemed like the 100th time in his life, and this was a new age. This was no longer an era of quiet mansions and smoking room conversations. It was an era of bold skyscrapers and vibrant downtown politics. The mists were out, curling around outside. Though the skyscraper was tall enough, he thought he could see stars and the red rip through that mist. He moved to push open the doors and step out onto the balcony, but paused, noticing his dressing table, upon which Druten had set out a row of objects. The valet had gone through Wax's things, from his pockets and from his possessions recovered from the hotel in New Saren. Druten probably wanted to know which should be kept and which disposed of. Wax smiled, brushing his fingers over the wrinkled cravat he'd worn to the party with Steris. He remembered tossing it to the ground as he changed to trousers and mist coat in his room prior to their quick escape from the city. Druten had laid it out, along with a napkin from the party, monogrammed, and even a bottle cap he'd swiped in case he needed something to push on. But Druten had set it out on its own little cloth as if it might be the most important thing in the world. Wax shook his head, resting a hand on the door out to the balcony. Then he froze and looked back at the table. It was right there, the coin he'd been given by the beggar, shining in the faint starlight. Druten must have found it in his pocket. Wax reached out, hesitated a moment, and then slipped it from the table before stepping out into the mist.
Could it be?
He held up the coin. Two different metals. One was silvery. Could that be nigrosil? The other was copper, a ferrochemical metal. Though the pattern printed on the face wasn't the same, and the coin itself was smaller, this didn't look all that different from one of the southerner medallions. As soon as he thought of it, as soon as he knew what it might do, the metal mine started working, and he found a store within him, a reserve he could tap. They called them copper mines, a very special kind of ferrochemical storage, one that stored memories. He tapped it. Immediately, Wax was in a different place, a barren land with no one in sight and only dust blowing around him. It was a difficult perspective to experience, for only half of the viewer's eyesight was normal. The other was all in blue, lines everywhere. The vision of a man spiked through the eye. The figure crossed those desolate reaches, passing half-tended crops left to die and rattle in the wind. Ahead lay a town, or the remnants of one. He heard his own boots on the dirty rock, the wind blowing, and felt cold. He continued on into the town, passing foundations marked by old, burned-out fires. Somehow he knew that the inhabitants here, as in other villages and towns he'd passed, had torn down their own walls for firewood in desperation to survive. Bodies lay in the street, stripped. Their clothing had been taken for burning after they'd frozen in what most men would consider only mildly cold weather. Ahead stood a bunker-like stone dwelling, Long and narrow, it reminded him of something. Not something Wax knew, but a memory in the mind of the man storing this experience. A memory of something long ago that flickered in his consciousness, then was lost in a moment. The traveler continued, stepping up to the doorway, which was open. They'd burned the door. Inside, a mass of people huddled together for warmth, wrapped uselessly in blankets. No fires left. They'd burned even their masks. The traveler moved among them, drawing some concern, though most people stared with dull eyes, awaiting death. He found the leaders near the center, the elders, aged and wearing cloth masks on their faces, the only things they had left. One ancient woman looked up at him and lifted her mask. He saw her normally in one world and outlined in blue in another. The traveler reached out and took the woman by the shoulder and kneeled down.
Survive.
Wax came out of that memory with a shock, dropping the coin, startled and stepping back. The coin settled to a stop near his feet. That arm, lined with a network of scars layered atop one another, as if made by scraping the skin time and time again.